But we begin this hour with a group that has never been on the radio before. This is their first opportunity. When charter schools began under the administration of Bart Peterson back in 2005, there were three organizations that were allowed to charter schools in Indiana. The Indianapolis Public Schools, that never did it, Ball State University, and the mayor of Indianapolis. And a couple of years ago, the state legislature authorized, created what they call the Indiana Charter School Board to be able to charter schools anywhere in the state of Indiana. They can put a charter school up in Lake Michigan. They can put it on the Ohio River. They can put it over by the Wabash. They maybe can put it next to a gambling casino in southwestern Indiana. I don't know. We'll find out. So it's another group that is putting charter schools throughout the state, including here in Marion County. They opened three schools in the fall of this particular school year. Six schools are scheduled to start, they say, the fall of 2013. We all know that means August. And this is their first opportunity for the community to hear what is the Indiana Charter School Board and what do they do. Claire Fidian Green is the executive director of the Indiana Charter School Board and one of the members of the board, the one and only Brother Bill Shrewsbury. He also joins us live. Guys, welcome. Glad to have you.
Thank you for having us.
What is the Indiana Charter School Board?
Just as you described, it's a statewide charter school authorizer. Mm-hmm. So that means we are set up as an alternative to Ball State and some other now nonprofit universities and colleges that have also decided to become authorizers. And our board has as its purpose to approve or decline charter applications that are submitted to it, and then to monitor those schools and ensure that they're fulfilling their accountability requirements.
What kinds, if somebody comes to you with an idea, what are you all looking for? Are you approving every idea that comes along? What percentage of the people that bring in idea get accepted? Are you looking for new and innovative or same old, same old? What is kind of the mission of this?
Well, that's a great question. When we first got started and our board got appointed, we received a competitive grant and went through a strategic planning process. Mm-hmm. And our board spent about 6 months talking about what kind of authorizer did it want to be. And we talked a lot about the principles that mattered to us. And so students first, for sure. Right. Mm-hmm. And then a commitment to innovation and setting really high standards and setting standards for excellence for the schools we authorize. So our board specifically did not say that we have a certain school in mind, mm-hmm. because the whole nature of innovation is that innovators will come up with an idea that they bring to an authorizer, such as a charter board. So we have not declared a preference for geographic areas or type of school, whether it's K-8 or 9-12 or K-12. And our board's been pretty committed to that. And we have received applications from 30 organizers. That's mm-hmm. the nonprofit mm-hmm. Entity that applies to an authorizer. And we've approved applications from 9. So that's 30% in terms of the organizers.
Now, you have three charter schools that are up and running right now, one here in Indianapolis, one up in Fort Wayne, and the other in Anderson. One is the Excel Center,
correct,
which has had a charter school here in Indianapolis authorized under the mayor.
Yes.
Is that one of your missions? Is if somebody got a charter school already authorized by Ball State or the mayor or somebody else, why should they run to you and get authorized someplace else? Seem to me they ought to go to the first person that loved them.
Well, the mayor of Indianapolis can only authorize within the consolidated city.
Okay.
So when the Excel Center, and really it's the Goodwill Education Initiatives Board, that they decided they wanted to replicate their model outside of Indianapolis, that's mm-hmm. when they came to our board.
So now you've got one that's the Excel Center, 9 to 12, that specializes in people who maybe, you know, dropped out of high school, want to get back, want to get the degree.
Yep.
You've got up in Fort Wayne a school that's got a great historic name, Thurgood Marshall Leadership Academy. What are they about?
The Fort Wayne Urban League had been in discussions.
It's Urban League?
Yes.
Okay.
They are actually the organizer that submitted the application to us. Mm-hmm. And they had been talking for a long time as part of their mission that they wanted to address education inequities for African-American youth.
Right.
And so as part of their own planning process, they decided that they wanted to become an organizer for a charter school. Mm-hmm. So they submitted an application to us actually on our very first application cycle, mm-hmm. and our board authorized them to open up. They're a K-8 school up in Fort Wayne.
Is this a school where the Urban League is doing it themselves, or did they hire one of these outside companies to run it for them?
They did. They've contracted with American Quality Schools, mm-hmm. which is a nonprofit management company that operates Thea Bowman Charter School up in Gary.
Oh, okay.
And also Xavier School of Excellence. Mm-hmm. So they actually did a bunch of due diligence and vetted which management companies they wanted to work with because they realized they'd never operated a school before and it's very complex. Mm-hmm. But they are the charter holder. That's the board of directors.
And then you got Carpe Diem right down the street here on North Meridian Street. That's the only one so far here in Marion County that's open right now.
Correct.
And then you, as I'm looking down the list, there are a couple more that will start in Indianapolis as I'm looking down over the next couple of or next school year. One is, as I look down the list, the George and Veronica Phelan Leadership Academy.
Correct.
And then there's something, and we had Brother Errol Phelan on the program a couple months ago. I'm talking about that. Mm-hmm. There's one called Nexus Academy. That sounds like the hair care product. It says Nexus. That's not what it is.
No. It's a college preparatory high school, so it's mm-hmm. serving grades 9 through 12. And they're going to be located in the Glendale area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a brand new model that's operated by Connections Education, which previously is just on a virtual model.
Okay.
This is what they call a blended model. So students have to be on campus 5 days a week, and they have face-to-face instruction coupled with online virtual instruction. And this is actually a college prep model that is new for Connections Education.
And then the other one that will open this fall is a Premier High School.
Yes,
what is that?
Premier High School is a dropout prevention and recovery model, mm-hmm. but it serves a younger population than the Excel Center. They typically serve students age 15 to 18, sometimes 19 years old.
So this is the younger ones. Where is that going to be located?
They have not located a facility yet, and as part of our pre-opening process, we have a pretty rigorous screening process to make sure that the applicants actually have identified and secured a facility. And if they have not done so by a certain time, then we talk to them about delaying for another year.
You may have questions about the Indiana Charter School Board, 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. And then as I look down, you've got two more that would open up in Indianapolis, one in 2014, mm-hmm. and that is called Basis. Indianapolis, and then one would open up in the fall of 2015, and that's the one with my favorite name, Rocket Ship.
Yes.
Indianapolis. As you did, one of the questions that is coming up more and more in the community with all of the charter organizers, whether it's Ball State, whether it's Indiana Charter School Board, and whether it is the mayor's office, is what is being done to analyze where these charters are going? For example, the Phelan Academy wants to go in a location where within 1 mile there's three charter schools already, plus Oaks Academy, without even counting an IPS school. And that's almost like it's almost like putting five McDonald's within a mile of each other, and McDonald's would not do something like that. What is it? The board's responsibility, or maybe you feel it isn't, to look at the impact of adding charter schools all in the same area?
Well, I'll start a response, and then I'd love to hear from Bill about that as well. I think we as a board, and speaking for the board members mm-hmm. and the staff, mm-hmm. we look to the organizer, the applicant, to tell us what is the need that they see in the community where they want to locate,
right.
and how will their school be different? Mm-hmm. How will that provide something unique and new for students who are not currently getting their needs met elsewhere? So that is their responsibility. However, our board does look at that information because really the charter school enrollment is totally driven by demand. If they can't get families and students to enroll, then they're not going to successfully open or remain open.
And Bill Shrewsbury, you have heard this argument and concern ever since Bart Peterson authorized the first three charter schools back in 2005. And there are some neighborhoods that are overpopulated with charter schools and other neighborhoods that aren't.
Yes, but those applicants have to do their own homework and background
as Clara said, it is demand-driven. Mm-hmm. And if they can't recruit and accept enough students, then they have a problem. But we do, as a board, when I was working with the city's charter school board and now with the state, we do try to look so that it doesn't become overpopulated or oversaturated with charter schools. But they continue to think that they can, as with the Baylen Academy.
In a county like this, and maybe to some degree in Allen County, in Fort Wayne, and in Lake County, Gary, East Chicago, doesn't there need to be somebody, and whether that's the Indiana Charter School Board, whether that's the State Department of Education, whether that is one of our institutions of higher learning, seems to be somebody needs to be figuring out, you know, how much the population of school-age children is going to be growing in those particular communities. A, try to estimate that growth for white, black, Hispanic, and then figure out, you know, what's the potential growth for traditional public schools, for charter, and the kicker in all of this, the growth of the vouchers. Because as the vouchers grow, that's taking – because, again, the education reform people say, well, we want competition. Well, all of a sudden now this is like if you look at traditional public schools as McDonald's, if you look at charters as Burger King, well, here comes vouchers. That's Wendy's. Mm-hmm. Wendy's getting ready to come in here and mess everything up. And the charter organizers may not be that sophisticated to figure that out.
Well, the mayor's office and the Indiana Charter School Board saw this coming when more authorizers were created by the legislature in 2011. Mm-hmm. So there are now 9 active authorizers in the state of Indiana. And really, before 2011, it was just the Indianapolis Mayor's Office in Ball State. And so we proactively created an Indiana Authorizers Alliance, mm-hmm. and we meet once per quarter. And then in addition to that, I probably speak with Brandon Brown, the director of charter schools for the mayor's office, or someone on his team at least 2 to 3 times a week. So we are very connected, and in fact, we're going through our application cycle right now, and Brandon Brown served as an evaluator for us, and we are going to be reciprocating for their application cycle because we both feel so strongly about the job of an authorizer is to ensure that you're only approving the highest quality applicants.
Somebody had a question, didn't want to go on the air, and we were talking, and I think they were hearing us, you know, the conversation about the Excel Center and then the conversation about this premier mm-hmm. high school, and we're hearing rumblings that the GED tests are getting ready to get harder, get more expensive. There's rumors that IPS could drop, you know, providing GED. Is providing GED a potential function of a potential charter organizer?
Actually, no. The schools that we have authorized are actually high schools. They're providing Core 40 diplomas mm-hmm. and alternative diplomas for those students who don't qualify for the Core 40. So they're not providing GEDs at all. They are providing a diploma.
Is that prohibited by the statute? Is that something that you cannot do?
Alternative education programs like the GED programs are operated by DWD.
By the Department of Workforce Development.
Correct.
Oh, goodness. Waiting for them to do something. We'll be waiting on. It's like 239-1310. 239-1310 is after news. The name is with Claire Fidian Green, the executive director of the Indiana Charter School Board and board member, Bill Shrewsbury. Let me go to the phones and anonymous. Hi there.
Yes, I had a question. Okay, do you regulate charter schools in Brownsburg?
Is there a charter school in Brownsburg?
No, that's the problem.
You'd like one in Brownsburg?
Yes.
Hey, I'm with you, girlfriend. I think there ought to be some charter schools.
How do I go about talking to someone, or what do we need to do?
Well, I think the first thing is with a charter school, if somebody lived in Brownsburg and wanted to get their kid to a charter school in Indianapolis, that's legal.
Yeah, but the transportation and the times and everything, it just doesn't work because I was trying to do that. Well, whatever that one.
Carpe Diem.
Yeah. Carpe Diem?
Yes, I wanted to do that one, but he worked with me the best he could, and we could not get it together.
Oh, darn.
I think some of the other charter schools here in Indianapolis have almost sort of a transportation system that has been set up with some of the parents.
But there's so few charter schools on the west side of Marion County. I can only think of Math and Science West is really the only one, because Imagine West, you know, that's the Imagine West is the one that's staying in business for now. Those are the only two. And then that brings up my point. Everything is so concentrated in the central part of the city that here's a lady, if you could just get it, maybe to Moeller Road, maybe to 465 West.
Yes.
See, she'd be in business. You could start a revolution in Hendricks County.
Well, and that's where we, as an authorizer, we don't say, well, we see a need in Brownsburg, and so we're going to place a charter school there. It's really up to an applicant to come to us and say, we see the need in Brownsburg.
But if the applicants are all got closed minds and tunnel vision that they all want to go in IPS, an area that is declining in population, white and black, and not looking at the areas where population is growing, and not hearing that there's a customer in Brownsburg just waiting to be saved by charter schools. Whose responsibility is it to tell these potential operators to expand their minds, particularly if the school funding formula is getting ready to get equalized so that a kid that lives in Brownsburg is worth maybe as much as a kid that lives in IPS?
Well, you raise an excellent point. And also just one follow-up comment on transportation is that charter schools don't get funding
for
transportation, and that makes it much more challenging for them. They have to operate all of their costs for facilities, transportation, and general operations out of what they get from the basic grant. Mm-hmm. So that puts them at a disadvantage. So they can't bus to Brownsburg, for example. That's pretty unaffordable. But I think it is the authorizer's responsibility to take a portfolio macro view and take a look at all of the available schools and the quality of those schools and have conversations with applicants that want to come into Center Township and say, perhaps you need to be looking elsewhere because you might not have sufficient demand to make a go of your proposed school.
Is the idea not so much if a great charter idea is in Lafayette to go with it rather than or encourage organizers, hey, Indiana is more than just Marion County?
Well, most of the applicants that we've received, first of all, they have been around the state, but the heaviest concentration has been Indianapolis and up in Lake County.
Right.
And the reason for that is because most charter school organizers want to serve kids who are not being served well in their current school districts.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the performance of IPS and then also some performance up in Lake County, I think that's where they initially tend to focus first.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're right, the way the funding has worked out in the past is that there's been the highest per pupil funding in the areas where in Indianapolis and IPS and then up in Gary. And that has also been a factor because, as I mentioned, charter schools don't get funding for transportation and facilities. They have to take a look at what are the economics of my model. And first of all, can we fulfill our mission, the students that we want to serve? And then can we afford to actually operate?
239-1310, 239-1310, it's Afternoon News Amos. We're talking about the Indiana Charter School Board. They are one of the three major organizers. Yeah, there's some other universities that can do it, but until they start bringing schools in here and messing up, I ain't going to talk. They're one of the three major organizers after the mayor of Indianapolis, after Ball State University. It's the Indiana Charter School Board, 239-1310. When we come back from the break, I want to ask Claire Fidian Green and Bill Shrewsbury, what do they do in terms of making sure that the schools they charter follow the rules of the game so that if parents have a grievance, you know, in a regular public school, you can go all the way up the chain of command to the elected school board. And that's been one of the issues with charter schools, people not parents and grandparents not understanding their rights and responsibilities under the charter school law. We'll come back and get their take on that and yours, too, at 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. 239-1310, 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos with Claire Fidian Green, the executive director of the Indiana Charter School Board, Bill Shrewsbury, who is a member of the board. It's how many members on the board?
Seven,
at least two African-Americans. You
and Virginia Calvin, who's
three.
From South Bend. And
Kariga Roush.
Yes.
Formerly with Stand for Children. One of the issues that has come up with charters ever since they began is a lot of confusion on the part of the community as to what I call the chain of command. And one of the things we do on this program is try to educate parents and grandparents. You got a problem in the school, you start with the teacher. Then you go from the teacher to the building principal, then from the building principal to a superintendent, and from the superintendent, you can always go to the elected school board. In a charter, that's obviously teacher, building principal or school leader, and then depending upon the structure, there's probably someone above the school leader, and there's the board. And usually that's where it starts to break down, parents not knowing when the board of the school meets, not realizing it is a public meeting like a Brownsburg school board meeting or an IPS school board meeting or a Pike Township school meeting. It's open to the public. The public should have at least once a month the ability to address the board. What are you guys doing in the schools you charter to make sure these schools understand they are they may have the word charter in their name, but they are public schools?
Mm-hmm. Well, as part of our oversight process, I mentioned we have a pretty rigorous pre-opening process, and our attorney will review the family handbook before we give final approval for them to open and make sure that there is a grievance process that is clearly spelled out in that handbook so that everyone is informed at the school. If I have a complaint, what's the process that I have to utilize to make sure that my complaint gets addressed? Mm-hmm. On our website, we have, under For Families and Communities, a link that says filing a complaint, and we state there, make sure you start with the school first, and if you can't get it resolved, then come to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then as part of the application process, we ask applicants to explain the grievance process, and we always want to hear how will the board be engaged, keeping in mind that a board is supposed to be a policy and governing entity, not a management entity.
Right.
So that should really be a place of last resort. And then if they can't resolve a complaint there, then they come to the authorizer, which is us, in this case, the Indiana Charter School Board. There's also, for certain complaints, you file a complaint through the Department of Education, mm-hmm. for example, related to special education complaints. So there's a process that you have to comply with there that's managed by the Department of Education.
As I'm looking at this on the website, you're saying, hey, if it's one of our schools, here's how you get a hold of us. If it's a mayor school, you get a hold of them. If it's a Ball State school, go to Ball State. If it's anybody else, go and figure out who the other people are and go with that. You obviously got only three schools so far. Are you getting complaints or things going according to Hoyle?
So far, we haven't received any complaints directly to us.
Mm-hmm.
We have been notified of some complaints that are being handled right now by the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
So those are being handled, and we've been notified of that. As part of our accountability process, you mentioned how do we make sure that families know that they've got access to the board. That's one thing that we pay very careful attention to. Are they complying with the open door law? Are they posting notice the way they're supposed to? Ideally, they should all have websites,
mm-hmm.
and all three of ours that are currently open do, so you know who are the board members,
right.
when are the board meetings taking place, so that you have equal and open access to those meetings.
In terms of how many charters do you all want to charter? I mean, you've got three now. You're looking at, I think, six next year. What's the timeline? Where do you want to be in 3 to 4 years?
Well, I'll let Bill address that as well. But through our strategic planning process, we specifically talked about, do we want to set a numeric goal?
Mm-hmm.
And our board decided ultimately we needed some kind of metric just so that we knew if we were actually succeeding. But we did not want to have a number of schools be driving any decisions that we made as an entity. So we basically set a numeric target but then qualified that and said, provided that we receive a number highly qualified applicants who come and seek a charter from our office.
Bill, one of the other one of the problems, if you set a quota as to how many schools we're going to have by X date, you just begin to take in all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some other states, the charter schools have failed because they were not looking at the quality as much as they were the quantity of schools.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, as a board, we said yes, we should try to continue to advance, but not to the point we're setting quotas. And
Bill Shrewsbury was around in the Peterson administration on the mayor's charter school board when some decisions had to be made to shut some schools down because not so much it wasn't academic performance, but it was some other kind of lack of
yes.
performance. What are you all doing? Are you monitoring your schools on a yearly basis, on an every other year basis? What's being done so that, like the mayor's charter school, there's a rigorous process to make sure that the business side is being done in a business-like manner and the academic side is being done in an academic manner, and not to be like Ball State to let things go for 6 or 7 years and then suddenly wake up with, oh, I got to do something?
Well, we, in designing our accountability system, which is posted on our website, mm-hmm. and we welcome everyone to take a look and call us with questions about that, but we intentionally benchmark with statewide authorizers that are high-performing in other parts of the country to take a look at what their process was. We, of course, spent a lot of time at the mayor's office, which has a smaller geographic footprint, mm-hmm. and they're in their schools pretty frequently. We intentionally designed a system where we have a formal site visit once a year. Mm-hmm. We also do monitoring site visits as necessary, and we're in pretty regular contact with all of our authorized schools.
Is one of the, because I think a couple of instances here in Marion County, charter schools got in trouble when they planned on X number of students and they got X minus Y number of students and their budgeting went upside down. How critical is it with schools that you all are starting out that these people who want a charter school have realistic hopes and goals for how many students they can get instead of telling you, well, we'll start with 300 the first year and the second year we're going to have 900.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll speak first. When I was working with the mayor's charter schools and now with the state, many come and say, oh, I've been teaching for X number of years and I've always wanted and I think mm-hmm. I can run a school. But reminding them, this becomes such a business and you have to have a business plan because of the legal aspects, the financial aspects, and then the curriculum in the right order, mm-hmm. curriculum education, but all the other. And so we really try before we approve an application to make sure they have a good educational and business model that they're going to be working from. And is it realistic?
One of the things that's been done with the Mayor's Charter School Office, and they work with some outside group, and the audience has heard a little bit about what is called the NEO plan. We really haven't gone into it in depth because the Mayor's Office has really never formally introduced the plan to the public. But one of the things this plan, or the consultants to the plan, not the Mayor's Office, but the consultants did, was analyze every neighborhood here in Marion County, every school, public, charter, and private, and looked at neighborhoods where there ought to be some, I guess, competition, that there ought to be some additional educational options. And most of those neighborhoods they recommended are not IPS neighborhoods. Is this something, as you all look at the landscape in Marion County, maybe encourage potential organizers or get them a copy of the book and say, look, would y'all maybe look at where the need is?
Yes, and in fact, I brought a copy of it yeah. with me, and we actually have the group that conducted that study, IFF, mm-hmm. They have talked to us about doing a similar study statewide, mm-hmm. Which would look at district as well as charter and voucher accepting private performance, mm-hmm. Because I think it is really important to understand the community in which an applicant's proposing to launch a school. How would it impact that community, and could they get mm-hmm. a sufficient number of students to come and stay at the school?
239-1310, back to the phones, and Miss B, hi there.
How you doing, Amos?
I'm fine. What's up?
I'm just calling because they use in our schools like a gold rush. You know, just come to Indiana, Indianapolis, and you'll get everything you want. And all these different states are coming here from everywhere to get money off our kids. And I think it's terrible how they're doing us, doing IPS. And it's awful. I just had that. Just to say, because it seemed like a godfather thing. You know, you take this territory and I'll take that. And I'm just so sick of what they're doing to our children.
All right, that's an interesting point. Are there, other than the folks with Charles Tinley, are there charter organizers that can do it all based from entities in Indiana, not hiring an out-of-state group that runs charter schools in other states? I mean, the Tinley organization, Ed Power, that's all Hoosiers. That's all people from here. Are there others that are just people from here?
Yes, Goodwill Education Initiative. So okay. They now have 5 Excel centers open and mm-hmm. then plans to open another 4. Mm-hmm. And that's all the folks from Goodwill Education
Goodwill
Initiatives.
Goodwill here in Indiana.
Correct.
High school, if they have a high school.
Exactly, and they have the Met as well.
Which one?
The Met over on
Michigan. Oh, the Met's good, right. The Met High School.
Yeah.
Great
and
school.
And then Crystal House Academy.
Right. Yes,
they used to just be the K-8, and then they grew to K-12, and now they have their own dropout recovery school, the Door School.
Mm-hmm.
They have an application before the mayor's office right now to open more such schools in Indiana.
Is this a growth area for charters, charter schools for those who have dropped out? Because I think when people hear charter schools are saying, they're competing against the traditional public schools, but the traditional public schools didn't have mechanisms to reclaim dropouts. Is this a growth area for charters?
I think it has been, but right now there was a moratorium that was just enacted on Friday at the end of the session last week.
The legislature added vouchers. They love charter schools, but they put a freeze on schools that could help dropouts?
Yes. That was included in the budget bill.
Where'd they find that? That doesn't make any sense. That's weird.
Was the thought that it's more of a Department of Workforce Development effort?
I think there's some concern about that. And, you know, these are students who haven't been in the system.
Oh, that's right.
Who have dropped out and then they're coming back in.
And how it affects the whole funding.
And how it affects the funding.
Yeah, you only have a certain pot.
That's why they should have had the live people in the casinos. We could have made more money on the casinos and tax that. Let me go to Pam at 239-1310. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Amos. I was laughing as I came on. One of the things that I wish would happen, and I'm the caller that called regarding the issue with the said charter school, and I actually have a meeting, because one of the issues is, like you mentioned, is the regulation of administration. And there is a disconnect between accountability for when the charter schools are not operating in their charter and who holds them accountable, as well as the retention, not just of the students, but of the teachers. These are not teachers that are unionized. So as a result of that, you have charter schools that have teachers that are coming in and out, students that are coming in and out, and I'm wondering what the position of the charter school board is to reach out to those people, teachers and students, to find out why they're leaving. Because if you look at the big picture, and I'm not going to name the school that I'm having issues with, but I am meeting with Brandon Brown and hopefully Mr. Clark on Thursday, The issue is we have all these schools going up, but who's governing? I mean, I know what it says on paper, and I know that we're making sure the money is right, but who's governing administration and finding out when these schools are not working very well, why they're not working very well, to prevent having to close them abruptly when they should have been watched a little closer in the beginning?
That's a great point. And she mentioned teachers, because usually you look at enrollment fluctuations or churn in enrollment of a school. But would it be disturbing to you all as an organizer as these schools open up and you suddenly look at 20, 30, 40% of the teachers are different in the next school year than the previous school year?
I think it depends on the situation. Mm-hmm. I think if you look at any type of school, there's always going to be teacher turnover. Mm-hmm. And if there is a teacher that is not performing well for students, the responsibility of that charter operator is to make sure that there's the best, most excellent teachers in every classroom so that no child is denied a great education. However, if there is very high staff turnover, that is actually a metric that we require our schools to report to us and we take a look at. Mm-hmm. And I think that would start to raise some red flags about what's going on at that school.
How important is it as a metric in terms of measuring how that school communicates with parents? Because a lot of times problems in school, I've heard it over the years, is even before there were charters, is a lack of communication by the leadership of the school, both at the building level and at the district level, to parents.
Yeah. I mean, it is absolutely the responsibility of the school to make sure that they are communicating transparently, but I think it's also the responsibility of the authorizer. There was another bill that was enacted last week, House Enrolled Act 1338, mm-hmm. and in it was improved transparency and accountability for all authorizers. Mm-hmm. So authorizers have to already prepare an annual report. And now that report, it spells out what exactly has to be in that report, and mm-hmm. it has to be posted on their website mm-hmm. with a link to the Department of Ed website. Mm-hmm. So everybody can take a look, go to the DOE's website first, and then kind of filter out from there to say what is going on at that school and what are the performance metrics that I can look
and
at.
And as I looked on your website, you all are preparing like a report that analyzes what each of the schools you've chartered have done.
Yes. Yep, so we have a performance dashboard. Right now it's dummy data because we don't have any data yet from our current schools. And we plan to publish that, post that on our website every year. And then in addition, we'll analyze all that information and just do a regular annual report as well.
So if we were having this discussion in November of this year, we would be able to look at your three schools, Carpe Diem, Thurgood Marshall, and Excel, and see if it's applicable. How do they do on iRead? How do they do on iStep? How do they do on the high school completion test? The high schools are too new to have a graduation rate, but it would be able to start to see the metrics and how well they did against each other. Would it then also statewide?
Yes, also statewide. And we're also looking at comparable schools, so schools that have similar grade levels in roughly the same areas or serving the same students. So we will do that, and actually it will be published each January because sometimes getting the data, there's a lag, and we want to make sure that we get all the data and then have time to analyze it and prepare a report.
I appreciate it, Pam. Thank you. 239-1310, 239-1310 this afternoon. The other thing in terms of this, right now charters in Indianapolis, Marion County, 64% of all students in charters are African American. As you're, and if all of these organizers all say, well, we want to go in the inner city, and if they're really serious about this, is part of when you look at these organizers, if they make that indication, are you looking at, well, how are you going to have a diversified staff?
You know, we are awarding the charter to the board of directors, so that we always look at the makeup of that board and the skills and talents. And actually, Mr. Shrewsberry asks at every one of those meetings, tell me about the diversity on your board. So I'll let him respond as well.
No, so you've beaten them up to make sure there's some diversity at the top before it moves down.
Yes, they have to begin to look at a diversified board and staff because they're going to be serving this diversity of students. And it is. It's one of the questions I've always asked. And our parental involvement with the board. So we do strongly emphasize, at least, and raise that question with all the applicants. Yes.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's the name. Let me see. We got an email here from Tran. It says, with all the charter schools being started, seems that IPS at some point is going to fall apart with the declined enrollment. Is there a possibility that down the line, IPS will become a large district of charter schools in order to remain open? He should have run for the board. See, he should have, you know, this guy should have run for IPS school board because I think that's one of the issues that they're gonna have to deal with down the line. 239-1310. 239-1310. When do you all meet? And that is open to the public, you know, and how do people find out when the Indiana Charter School Board meets and when will you all decide the next group of schools that you will be authorizing?
Well, as part of our process, it's required in law to have a public hearing. And I mentioned earlier we're going through our spring application cycle right now. We actually have a hearing tonight at 4:45 here at the Government Center South, and that is open to the public. We welcome members of the public to attend. We had a hearing in Clarksville last week. Mm-hmm. We have one up in Muncie and one up in Gary, and that's all based on who has applied to us and where they're proposing to
locate. How many applications are in under consideration?
Six.
Yeah.
And then our board meets on May 24th at 8:30 in the morning, also in Indiana Government Center South, and that is open to the public. And we are setting that up to be streamed live as well.
And there's six applicants, no guarantee that it'll be all six.
That's correct.
Be all six. It could be zero.
That's correct.
Yes, because they do pre-screening. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of evaluation and interview before it even comes to the board, and then it comes to the board with a recommendation. But yeah, it could be six or it could be zero.
If, as you start evaluating your schools that are open and you see that a school is headed in the wrong direction and knowing the kind of backlash that occurred here in Marion County with a couple of charter schools being closed in the middle of a school year, have you all started to think about what happens if you find a school has just fallen, when it's something you've authorized has just fallen off, the wheels have just fallen off the wagon and something has to drastically be done?
Yeah, we talked a lot about that during our strategic planning process because the wisdom of our board members, some of them have gone through school closures and they're always painful and you know, very disruptive for the families and the teachers and those communities. So our board talked about if we see that coming, first of all, communicating transparently with the schools and with the community about how we view their performance based on our framework, our performance framework. So the metrics are objective and very clear to see how a school is stacking up. And if it looks like things are not going well, then starting to have a plan about could we find somebody else to come in and take over so those families could decide if they want to keep their students enrolled there, be the same building, the same neighborhood, and just a different set of people actually running the show.
Yeah, but we won't wait 3 years. If we see it in year one, then Claire's back and looking for improvement in year two and three. And
would it be something where you might have just conversations with in advance with other people that are already authorizers, that you've authorized charter schools, to say, gee, what if? You know, if we found somebody fell off the wagon, right, could you handle a second school in an emergency?
Right. Good.
Yeah.
I think absolutely.
Yes.
And if our goal,
because the goal
is,
would be to keep it open, keep the staff intact, keep the kids intact.
Yes.
And really, if our number one guiding principle is students first, and our board really means that, and we talked a lot about that, and if those kids are not getting the education they deserve, as an authorizer, it's our responsibility to make sure that they get the best that they can. And if it's not being provided by the group we've authorized, then another group needs to come in. And whether that's us calling the mayor's office and saying, have you approved a school that could locate in this building, you know, so we can partner with each other, it doesn't have to all be from the charter board.
If, and we've said this, you know, publicly on this program, if IPS finally goes through a planning process and realizes that their enrollment is probably going to, you know, be in the neighborhood of 25 to 27,000 students for the next 5 to 6 years, and they need to downsize buildings in order to make that happen, and all of a sudden buildings became available, is that something to encourage your organizers to say, okay, maybe this building isn't on Meridian Street where you think you'd like to be, but it's over in a place where you could try to make something happen, save some dollars, and put some more dollars back in the classroom?
That's always a big part of the application, is
finding the building,
capital, and then transportation, but finding the building. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we do our best to try to make sure where these charters are located, but often finding the building or a facility, because it does take some time and effort, and then, you know, beyond constructing a facility, that's pretty difficult and pretty fast.
Because there's some extra code things you have to have, because it involves kids.
Yes,
and
exactly.
The doors and the fire and the sprinklers and all that kind of stuff.
Restroom size.
Yeah, restroom size and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If people want more information, you all have a website, and that is, what's the, is that strange website? I think it's www.in.gov/ICSB.
That is correct.
And everything you ever wanted to know about the Indiana Charter School Board.
We try to post everything there and be as transparent as possible.
Claire Fidian Green, she's the executive director of the Indiana Charter School Board. Bill Shrewsbury, father of charter schools, is that?
Amos, I'm for education.
You're for education.
Yeah, I am, and I work with.
How do you answer, Bill? How do you answer, you know, those that say this is all a plot to destroy IPS?
No, it's not. And I work with IPS, with their foundation. I've been on boards, and I want to work with them. I work with charter schools. I really believe that if you start to look in our community, how could we make improvement? I think it's through education.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm for education. I'm not against IPS. I'm not against whatever. I'm for education and helping our children.
You sure you don't want to be superintendent of IPS?
No.
It pays well.
I've been an elected official. That's good. Roads and streets and garbage. But
you ain't ready to do that.
No,
I can't draft you.
Chris
was getting ready to start the campaign.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
No. Okay. We tried. Bill Shrewsbury and Claire Fidian Green with the Indiana Charter School Board. Guys, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Amos, thank you.